Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, I chat to Dak from Dak's Emu Mob in Victoria, discuss geocaching license renewals for 2007, and I reveal my stupidity in an attempt to demonstrate to you what you shouldn't be doing while geocaching. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 6 of GeoTalk. I hope you've enjoyed any time that you've taken off over the summer or Christmas break and maybe got a bit of geocaching done in the meantime. I've had a quiet week of late. I've spent most of my time enjoying the long afternoons at the beach, beautiful beaches here in Sydney, or at the outdoor cinema at Olympic Park. And although I managed to set a puzzle cache that I had in the works for a few weeks, I didn't get to complete my pod cache, so I'll have to reveal that in the next episode or maybe even later. This weekend, I'm travelling to Dubbo to attend a geocaching event organised by The Bronze, and hopefully I might find a few geocaches up in the Red Ochre region up there in central New South Wales. And next weekend, which is the Australia Day long weekend, so we've got Friday, Saturday and Sunday, a big trifecta of geocaching days, I'll be joining WebGuy and Absailing in the Blue Mountains. Now, I'm hoping that this is not the last GeoTalk and that I do return alive. He suggested I take my mobile MP3 recorder, so you should hopefully hear the results of that adventure fairly soon. Finally, a reminder, we're in the middle of the bushfire season and also in the middle of summer, and with temperatures reaching 40 degrees Celsius throughout many parts of the country, remember to take care when you're geocaching in the bush by taking lots of water, at least about 2 litres per person, a lot of sunscreen and insect repellent, wear long pants, and remember to let someone know where you're going at all times. Before I go any further, though, it's time for the GeoTalk quiz. Question for this episode is, where are the most northern, southern, eastern and western geocaches in Australia? And that is on the mainland and in Tasmania. See how you go with that one. It's time to get geotalking. Welcome to Geocacia Profile. I'm joined in this episode by Dax Emu Mob and the leader of Dax Emu Mob, Dak, also known as David. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Darren. How are you, mate?
Good. First thing, let's clear up. How did you get your name and what is the difference between Dak and Dax Emu Mob?
Okay, Dak is me. That is my initials, David Alexander Kruger. And it was when I first joined the computer game, my computer login was Dak, D-A-K. And so when I came to a geocaching name, I decided that Dak would be a good name for it. Unfortunately, that name was already taken by some fellow who hasn't found a cache since 9 days before I joined, and he only found 15 caches or something. So unfortunately, the name was gone. Now, I'm also self-employed, and my company name is Emu IT. So that's where the Emu came from. And then the other part, Mob, we decided, well, we were wondering whether it should be Dax Emu Team, but everyone has a team, so, and anyway, who's ever heard of a team of emus? So in keeping with Macca Mob, we chose Mob, so Dax Emu Mob. So the Dax is actually a possessive. It's the Emu Mob that belongs to Dak.
So if I'm attempting one of your caches and I thank you at the end, I either say thank you, Dak, or thank you, Dax Emu Mob.
Yes, exactly.
Right, we've got that cleared up.
Not thank you, Dax. I'm not a pair of trousers.
Exactly. Might have to explain that to the US listeners. Yes. Now, at the moment, you're sitting... I mean, I know it's not all about the numbers. We keep saying that. But yeah, you're sitting second in Australia as far as the number of cache finds. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so you're just behind Macca Mob. Tell me, how long have you been geocaching for?
I started on the 21st of September, 2003. So, 3 and a bit years.
Right. So you've come sort of relatively late compared to some of the more, I suppose, for lack of a better term, old-timers.
Yeah, exactly.
And how did you find out about geocaching?
I do a lot of travel in my job, which explains really why I get to cache in so many different places. And I was coming back on a flight one time, and I must have been really bored, and I was reading the in-flight magazine. There was an article in there written by someone in San Francisco about a friend who was a geocacher. And she described what they did. They went and parked somewhere and then they followed the needle until they found this little plastic box full of goodies at the base of a tree. And I just thought, oh, yeah, that sounds good. And I didn't think much more about it, really. And the very next week, I was running a training course, and lo and behold, one of the students pulls out a GPSR. And he was waxing enthusiastic about how you can navigate and all this sort of stuff. And I said to him, have you ever heard of geocaching? Oh, yeah, he said. And he told me a bit more about it. And so I bought the GPSR off him. He sold the things. That's why I was flashing it around at the class. So I bought a GPSR off him on the Thursday and found my first case on the Saturday. And been doing it ever since.
So are you a Garmin or Magellan user?
I'm a Magellan man. That's why I found so many. I have a great deal of respect for anybody who finds 1,000 caches with a yellow E-Trex.
Now, you're based in Victoria. Is that where most of your caches you've found?
Yeah, I think I found about 1,200 odd Victorian ones, and then I found in most states I found about 200 now. In Queensland, I think I found 450 odd, and in the US I found 450 odd.
In your opinion, where do you think the best caches are, or who seems to be providing the most challenging or most interesting ones?
Well, I'd say Brisbane, without a doubt. I like Victorian caches, obviously, because I've found so many, but the Brisbane people seem to have a lot more innovation up there. There's a lot of puzzle caches and innovative ideas and so on. And so there are people like IF up there who puts out some really good caches, really interesting and well-thought-out caches.
What's been your most memorable caching experience in the 3.5 years you've been doing it?
I always say my favourite cache was one that I found in San Francisco. I'd only been caching 3 months or so, and I was sent over to the US to do some training. And it was close to San Francisco, and I really wanted to log a letterbox hybrid, which we didn't have over here in Australia at the time. So I spent a whole day driving down to San Francisco, logged one cache and came back again. I'd never do that now, of course. I'd stay down there and, you know, log a fair few. But anyway, it turns out it was my favourite cache of all time. It was in a building called a columbarium, which is basically an internal or an inside cemetery. So the coordinates just took you to the door of the place, and then there were 8 photographs that you had to follow your nose with these photographs to find the cache. And the cache was just a small tobacco pin sized box sitting on a ledge. And you open it up and there was a logbook inside it and a little stamp. It was just a fascinating place. It was a round building, so when you went inside, most of it was empty, of course, except for all these little crypts around the wall. And it was about 3 or 4 stories high. And then there was this beautiful stained glass window in the ceiling. It was just a magic experience. And the cache is called Columba, C-O-L-U-M-B-A.
So what is it that you enjoy most about caching? Is it the travelling, or is it the challenge, or is there some other thing?
There are, you know, it's probably the same as a lot of people, but, you know, I enjoy the thrill of the hunt. I enjoy finding the things, you know, pitting myself against somebody else. I like puzzle caches, actually, although I wouldn't say I'm all that good at solving them, but I've done a fair few. But the thing I really like, and I think the thing that stands out, is that it just takes me to places that I would never go to otherwise, especially now that I'm, when I travel. Like, I remember, I used to go to Singapore twice a year, and my wife would always ask me, did you go out to see Changi? And I'd always say no. And so in 13 visits, I'd never been out there. And on the 14th visit to Singapore, I was a geocacher. And I saw more of Singapore in that weekend than I did for the whole 13 previous visits, including going out to Changi and seeing the War Museum and so on. So that's what really ices it for me. It's just all the new things I see, and even in your own area, stuff you didn't even know existed.
Having done caches in the United States, do you find that there's a difference between the type of caches over there and the ones here?
Yeah, definitely a lot more micros and smalls. The last time I was over there, 70% of the finds were either micro or small. And the trouble is, I think, at least in the area I've been to, which is around the Sacramento area, the case saturation is so great now that all the good places are gone. And there's a case every 160 metres, and they're all just micros stuck under lampposts and things like that. Not all, but, yeah, there's quite a lot of them. Yeah, they're running out of places to put them. And so you find that there's a case being put there for the sake of putting one there.
Do you think that places like Melbourne, Sydney or Brisbane are heading down that way, or do you think that there's a large enough area that it may not happen?
I think there's a large enough area and not as many caches. Over there, there's a lot more people doing it than we have here, although the numbers are picking up. I hope it doesn't end up so saturated like the US, because I do see a disturbing number of micros coming out. And I often think to myself, it's just a cheap and nasty way of putting a cache out. All you need is a film canister and a piece of A4 paper. And it's just, In some cases, the cases, it's a really interesting case, but the find then just turns out to be just another crappy microbe.
And you mentioned before that you're hoping to crack the record for the most cache finds in a day. Are there any other goals that you've set yourself or where you'd like to see geocaching and yourself in geocaching in the future?
Oh, gee. No, I haven't really thought. I generally don't think any more than about 12 months ahead, and I haven't actually set a goal for this year. Last year, early on, I set a goal of I wanted to do 1,000 cases in the year, and I had a stretch goal of 1,200, which would be 100 a month. It turned out I smashed both of those and did 1,503 last year. So I'll probably try, you know, I'll set that same sort of goal again. But other than that, and actually to meet cachers, that's one thing I really like about my job too. I've met cachers in most states now. Even if I haven't met them personally, I know them reasonably well, well enough to ring up and speak to and so on. And that really makes it more enjoyable. You know, when I go to places like Queensland, I can meet with Paul Morfords or the Garner family or Lieutenant Sniper, and we can go out caching together. Or in Adelaide, it's Skippy and Lamb Chops or SA Parrothead or Freddo that I have a pretty good relationship with. And that's what I find really enjoyable, actually, about it. The social aspect of caching really is another thing I really enjoy.
Well, given that you found so many caches, I think a lot of people would like to hang out with you and find a few more in the future. Look, thanks very much for joining me, David, or Dak, and all the best with your caching.
Thanks, Darren. I appreciate the honour of being interviewed.
Well, 2007 has rolled around, but it appears that many geocaches in Australia have forgotten to renew their licence. Already, several geocaches have been caught caching without a license, resulting in several hundred smileys in fines and the revoking of miles on travel bugs. I'm joined on the line by Australia's license control officer, Shelley from Team Spruce Mooses. How are you, Shelley?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, first of all, tell me, what is a Geocaching Australia license?
A license is a card that gives you the eligibility to legally geocache in Australia.
And why is it important that someone needs to have a license and carry it with them at all times?
Well, look, it came about with contact with the National Parks and Wildlife Service and the police. As many people may know, geocaches have sparked bomb scares, and people are quite frequently disturbing native flora and fauna. So they decided that something needed to be regulated. And that's how the geocaching license came about, and is why you need to carry one now, so that they know that what you're doing is now legal and not illegal geocaching in Australia.
Now, many geocaches from overseas, particularly in the US, have been surprised to learn that you do need a license in Australia, and a few of them have actually been deported or sent back home for being caught geocaching here without one. Can you tell me, have you come across any recently that where that's occurred?
Look, there were a couple of teams from the US who came out without a license and were caught under a railway bridge by the federal police and were immediately escorted home.
Okay, and I've also heard rumours that there are several prominent geocachers. We won't name any names, but some of the top ranking ones in Australia who have been caught in the last week or two for forgetting to renew their license, and also a few of them have been logging too many undersized microcaches. What happened to them?
Well, look, they have been, and they've been logging microcaches with children around, and that's got to be a big problem. It's unacceptable in Australia for children to be going to microcaches with no swaps. Children are getting very distressed that they can't swap their little treasures over. And, it's now being deemed as very unacceptable behaviour to take young children out caching for micros only.
Now, I suppose a lot of people are listening now going, what the heck are we talking about? Because we better give the game away, shouldn't we? It's not exactly true, is it?
No, you don't need a licence. It's just for fun.
So this is the second year that a Geocaching Australia license has been available. The first one was developed last year by Ginger Loon, and you've taken on board the challenge for this year. Can you tell us a little bit about the license and how and what it really means?
Well, look, it came about with Phil from the Ginger Loon from Team Chaos, and he thought it'd be a bit of fun to have something really. I think it comes about where people are always asking, what the hell is geocaching? This little card gives a very quick explanation. So if someone sees you rustling in the bushes and says, "What on earth are you doing?" You can just show them the card and it saves you the whole explanation on what you're doing in there.
Now, how do you go about getting one?
All of the details are on the Geocaching Australia forums under the 2007 license thread. If you send a stamped self-addressed envelope through to me, I can then post your card back.
Excellent. Now, on a slightly different topic, I'm aware that you work for the Country Fire Authority in Victoria.
Yeah.
And there's been bushfires raging in that state now for up to 50 days, I think, now we're clocking up. It's quite a huge bushfire. How are the firefighters coping down there?
Oh, look, I'm getting a lot back through my office coming off night shift, and they're very tired, and they've been out, you know, day after day. So, yeah, they are getting a bit tired, but thankfully today we've had lots and lots of rain, and that's going to put a big, you know, big sigh of relief over all of the firefighters. It just eases our stress significantly. Yeah.
Now, the fires are occurring in a number of areas around the state, and I suppose some people, particularly over the weekend, will still want to go geocaching. And with fire bans throughout most of southeast Australia, what should geocachers do to make sure that they don't put themselves in any danger if they're going to be going out during the fire season?
It's really all about common sense. If you see smoke, don't go there. And if you are going into an area that has been affected by fire recently, even if it's not active in the area, it's been put out a few days or weeks ago, there is also the danger of falling trees and landslides just because the ground is very unstable. So although we can't tell people not to go there, unless, of course, the park is closed, it's really a good idea just to stay away for a few weeks, let the environment recover while it can, and then once things look like they're, you know, open for business again, then by all means, go back in. Just be very careful.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, all the best. I hope the rain does put out most of it and that you have a much easier fire season, and all the best too with the geocaching licenses. Thanks for talking to us, Shelley.
Thanks a lot.
Most geocachers, before they go out, review where caches are hidden and the best ways in which to get to the place that they want to park or walk. But have you ever been sitting around at home one morning and then just thought, maybe I might go out for a geocache or two? Well, a few weeks ago, I decided to grab my backpack and my GPS receiver and head out without any planning. Now, the first geocache I found immediately, there was no problem there, but the second one was not so successful. So for the next couple of minutes, join me as I attempt to find a cache in a small piece of Sydney suburban bushland.
Okay, I'm out in the field looking for a geocache out near Kerangai National Park. Well, it's kind of, I'm not sure if it's Kerangai or Main Cove. Anyway, it's one of Two Dogs caches, and I'm facing one of probably the most common dilemmas that a lot of people who don't put enough planning into searching for a cache have come across. I'm a little bit lost. Now, I'm only 200 metres away from the cache, but I'm going through a lot of bush, and I thought I had a path, but I lost that very quickly. And it's a beautiful, humid day, and knowing Sydney, and from what fellow geocachers have told me, it's probably good weather for ticks, which I've yet to encounter since I've moved up from Canberra, because you usually just put up with snakes and the odd spider or two. The other thing that's making this difficult is that I'm on a fairly steep incline. And there was quite a bit of rain yesterday, so it makes it a little bit slippery. But it looks like I may have found a path. I'll get back to you soon. Okay, well, I'm back with you. 10 minutes since I last spoke, and I've progressed all of about 25 metres according to the GPS, but I'm not placing too much faith in it, partly because the signal keeps dropping out. And it's a very wooded area. So, in fact, it's now telling me it's 200 metres, so it's telling me I've got nowhere. It's a beautiful, humid day, so now I'm sweating. If one thing I give myself credit for, I've got 2 litres of water. And I think that's probably the most essential thing. If there's nothing else you bring when you go geocaching, you should definitely take water with you. When I set Canberra's horizon about 2 years ago, it was quite a warm day and totally underestimated the amount of water I needed and only took 600 mils. And, of course, ran out after about 3 hours. And the walk itself turned into a 10-hour marathon. So I was quite dehydrated and not feeling all that well by the end of it. The other thing that's complicating it, apart from the vegetation and the slope, is that you might recall from previous ones we were talking about snakes. And ever since that one, I've been a little bit more wary of our good friend the Death Adder, which I wasn't aware, but does appear in Sydney. And in some rural areas, it's not just a desert snake. And Death Adders, as you've heard in the last two shows, are notorious for staying put and trying to pretend that they can camouflage, which they do a pretty good job of. And looking at the foliage around here, I would say that it'd be pretty easy to pass by one. It looks like I'm getting towards the end, the bottom of the gully where there's a small creek here. So I'm going to see if I'm going to work my way here. Hopefully there may even be a path running alongside the creek. I'll get back to you soon. I got towards the bottom of the gully and it was just getting ridiculous. The ferns were getting up to chest height and it did look quite moist. So I backtracked a little bit and then pulled out what every geocacher should have, along with a GPS as a compass. And then did a reading just to check, because the GPS was saying it was in an easterly direction, but obviously it wasn't able to help me find where east is, and it's the middle of the day in summer, so the sun is directly overhead, so you can't use that. I actually found that I wasn't quite heading in the right direction, so climbed up the hill a bit, gone east, and I found a much clearer area. And I'm still tackling a bit of bush. It's nowhere near as dense as what it was before. Plenty of spider webs as well. So that's another thing you should always consider carrying, is a compass. For a number of reasons. First of all, if your batteries die in your GPS, you're going to be a bit lost. So take a compass with you. I've just got a fairly cheap $18 one that works quite well. I've had that for a number of years. The other reason why you'd have a compass is because if you're in this sort of environment where you've got lots of trees all around you, you're going to find it hard to work out where to go. And having said that, I found a track. Isn't that always the way? And given that the rating on this cache is a 2 for terrain, I should really have found a better track. I did start on one, but seemed to maybe take it the wrong way and lost it very quickly. Well, I'll get back to you when we found the cache. I found the cache. It was quite an experience. I've taken about 10 minutes to get my breath back and cool down. The cache was actually very easy to find. The problem was me getting there, and after reading through the logs in the logbook, I've now realized that there's another place I could have parked, which was only about not even 100 meters away from what it says. And I wouldn't have done all that bush bashing and wasted about 40 minutes of getting there. So, a couple of lessons. What have I learnt? Okay, first of all, if you're going to go out caching, particularly if you're going to do one that involves a bit of a bushwalk and isn't a sort of drive-by or an urban cache, you really need to read up some information about it. I think the first port of call, which is what I usually do, is go to Google Maps or Google Earth and do a zoom in on the region and get a bit of an idea of the lay of the land. So that's probably my first tip for you all. The second one is check the terrain rating. Obviously, this one I thought was a 2, but it's actually a 1.5. It's guaranteed to have a path. So if you can't find a path to get there, you're pretty much in the wrong spot. And I think the final thing is, don't trust the GPS too much. I mean, I didn't this time anyway, but it had me wandering around in circles, and I had the tracking feature on, and I'm just looking back at it now, and I've done almost a complete circle in one point. So that's quite amusing. Now, the only problem is I've got to get back to the car, so hopefully it won't take me as long. And hopefully you might have learned some lessons from this, although I presume that many geocachers have probably been in this situation. Anyway, off I go.
Well, the less said about that last bit, the better. On to the answers for the GeoTalk quiz. Where are the most northern, southern, eastern and western geocaches in Australia? Well, in the east, it's Eastern Extreme near Byron Bay in New South Wales. Down in the south, Clear Sky Blue south of Kingston in Tasmania. The Tower of Terror in Northern Territory up in Nullumbai is the most northern, and Lighting the Way north of the township of Denham in Western Australia. Now, there are actually two caches on Thursday Island, but as I did mention, I was only counting the mainland and Tasmania, but certainly that'd be a bit of a challenge to get to. Finally, a quick hello to SDA Jumpmaster from Fort Campbell in Kentucky, who sent me an email this week. Thanks for the email, and thanks for letting us know that you're listening in the US. Don't forget, if you have an email or an idea for the podcast, send it to geotalk@mac.com. Also, drop a comment on the GeoTalk website at www.geotalk.libsyn.com and in the iTunes directory. And also, don't forget to tell your geocaching friends about the podcast and encourage them to subscribe. Until next time, safe geocaching.